Move into different territory. Of course, it was only yesterday that we brought you the news of that shooting in a small church outside San Antonio during a Sunday service. 26 people dead, 20 injured. The gunman, Devin Patrick Kelly, was armed with three guns and had argued with his mother-in-law before the rampage, according to officials. He called his father after he was shot by an armed bystander and said he didn't think he would survive. He was not legally permitted to own the weapons, which included a semi-automatic and two handguns. As you might expect, it's thrown up the entire debate about gun ownership, the Constitution, which amendment, people's rights, the politics of it, the individual's right to protection. Would we have fewer deaths, some argue, if more people carried guns? Is it the gun culture that is responsible directly or indirectly for these kind of mass shootings? In a while, we'll talk to John R. Lott Jr., author of The War on Guns and More Guns, Less Crime, and the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. But first, Richard Wolff, Guardian columnist in the United States, whose article today really grabbed my attention. The article was headlined, "The Heartbreaking Stupidity of Americans' Gun Laws." Richard, good evening to you, sir.
Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Reading your article, rather interesting, and we'll hear from John in a second, who I'm sure is going to throw up multifarious arguments against much of what you have written. But this wasn't just about your belief that the gun laws are archaic and dangerous. It sort of went a little deeper than that, even into the territory that a terrorist who's on a watch list can still legally buy a gun in the States.
That's right. You know, you can argue all you like about whether you could reduce crime through guns, whether the Second Amendment, which gives people the right to own guns, is relevant in this case or not. But let's just think for a minute about some common sense consistency in America's attitude towards guns. The United States prevents thousands of people from boarding an airplane today because it suspects they may be terrorists or have terrorist sympathies. And yet, because of the National Rifle Association, because of the gun lobby, because of their influence over Congress, those same people on the terror watch list are perfectly legally able to buy guns, any amount of guns, assault rifles, whatever they like, in the same country. It makes no sense. It makes no sense to gun advocates. It makes no sense to people who oppose these kinds of completely free gun laws. And yet it's still the law of the land.
Let me bring in John, because, John, you are pro the right to own guns. And good evening to you, sir, by the way. Thank you for having thank you for sparing time to join us. John R. Lott, Jr., author and also president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. What you've just heard Richard there outline an element of your system that is clearly, by anybody's standards, stupid.
Right. Well, thanks for having me on. I don't think Richard very accurately described what the debate is over those things. I mean, what the debate in Congress has been over what protections you have to make sure somebody really should be on that list or not. And so the Republicans wanted to have court overseeing individuals who were not going to be able to buy a gun for self-defense so that they could, in secret, see whether or not the person deserved to be on that list or not if there was a challenge. The Democrats didn't want to have a challenge to it. They wanted to have whatever. You can have one bureaucrat put your name on the list. And while terror watch list sounds bad, people have to realize it's morphed quite a bit. And I'm sure Richard knows this from what it was originally intended. Just during the Obama administration, the size of the list has increased over 12-fold, and that it includes people now that have nothing to do with terror. Most of the people there are things like, it's just an investigative tool. If the government wants to go and talk to somebody, even if they don't believe that they're involved in a crime, somebody may be a witness to a crime, they can put them on the terror watch list as a way of having the government be able to go and locate them and find that they want to talk to them.
I think, Richard, what John is alluding to there is that the list is not a list of people who are likely to blow us up, but there's all sorts of other characters on it. Therefore, your point is invalid.
I think it's so wonderful that gun rights activists care so deeply about the rights of terror suspects. I mean, who would have thought in the age of extreme vetting that they're caring about civil liberties quite so much about terror suspects? Come on, this is nonsense. The only reason they make this argument is because they fear this is a slippery slope and it's big government. In fact, you could make the same case about people with mental health, and the NRA's position right now is that there should be a database of people with mental health issues, but no database of people who have guns in this country. How does that make any sense? You could argue very carefully and very sincerely that mental health is a whole range of things, and people may or may not be. Yeah, hold on one second, I can interrupt you. Mental health issues, no, please. Mental health issues, you may be wrongly on the list, and yet that's not an issue for the NRA. It's not an issue for gun rights advocates. This is a preposterous red herring, and all it does is show that there is a grotesque inconsistency in the gun laws in this country.
John, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, look, I mean, the difference between the two pieces of legislation was whether or not the government would have to make a case, if challenged, to a secret court where a judge could look at the evidence to see whether or not the person actually was a terror threat or not. You may regard that as just a canard that's been put up in order to justify it, but it seems to me if people were, it's hard to see why somebody would object to that type of safeguard that was there. Look, I'll just give you one piece of evidence. Since 2001, when they've started this list, there have been something like 5,000 people on the list who have bought guns. Not one single person who is on the list has been involved in any type of crime. No crimes have been committed with one of those 5,000 people who are on the list.
Okay, John, let me just take you back to the real nuts and bolts then of the wider debate on gun ownership. Do you think America would be safer if more people owned guns?
Yeah, well, the attack yesterday was stopped by a citizen that owned a gun. I wish that there was somebody in the church that had owned a gun and had it with them at the time. You know, there are multiple witnesses, and as well as the state police, that said that many more people would have died if it hadn't been for the civilian who had a gun, but who fired at the killer there, caused him to drop his gun and to leave the scene. And in fact, it was that civilian who wounded the person sufficiently that he later died from that wound.
Let me bring Richard Wolff, Guardian columnist in the US, back in. Richard, there it is, laid out by John. In fact, more gun ownership would have saved lives in Texas yesterday.
Yeah, Texas is awash with guns. There are more guns than there are actual human beings in Texas. It didn't stop the massacre. And John is, as a New York senator once famously said, he's entitled to his own set of opinions, but not his own set of facts. The gunman had finished his massacre when he was confronted by an armed civilian. According to the local sheriff, the gunman actually ended his own life by his own gun. So, you know, it's a nice fabrication. It might help his argument, but it isn't actually factually based on what law enforcement is saying. In any case, 26 people had already lost their lives by the time anyone intervened, and that's in a state with some of the laxest gun laws in the country. Remember, this is a shooter who was denied a state gun license, but it was perfectly legal under Texas state law for him to still buy a gun. That makes no sense.
John, would you support the last point that Richard just made there? There is something nonsensical about the system here.
Well, the difference is whether or not somebody has a permit to carry, and there are stricter rules that you have to meet in order to be able to go and carry a gun in public than it is to be able to go and have a gun.
No, John,
able to go and have at your home.
John.
But the point is...
John, get your facts right. John, get your facts right. It wasn't a license to carry. He wasn't allowed a license for a gun at all in Texas.
On our website, crimeresearch.org, I have media clips from both the Texas State Department of Public Safety, the police there, as well as various witnesses who say what you just described as what happened in the case there is wrong. That they,
John,
that their
John, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, who is a massive gun rights advocate, said on CNN today that the owner should never have had the gun because he did not have a license. And yet, in his own state, it's perfectly legal to buy a gun when you are denied a license, because you don't have to have a license to buy a gun.
There's a license to carry, not a license to own.
How does it make sense?
And it's different rules.
How does it make sense?
He was denied a license to carry, but he wasn't denied a license to be able to own a gun in his home.
Why was he denied that license, John?
Why was he denied the John? Why was he denied the license? Richard's asking.
If what now?
Why was he denied the license to carry?
Because they have stricter rules. He had a misdemeanor conviction for assault, and under misdemeanor, after a certain time, you can't carry a gun in public. If you had within a 5-year period,
but that bit makes sense. But the idea that you can still purchase one, regardless of the additional law about carrying it, does that not seem at odds with logic to you, John? That a man with a serious call sheet of criminality behind him is still able to purchase an armory of weapons?
He had one misdemeanor conviction. Okay, and so the question is, should you be banned for life from being able to go and own a gun for protection because of that?
Let me ask you this, John. I'm just aware of time, sir. Why do you think the United States disproportionately has such a problem with gun crime and these kind of shootings? 85 people a day, I think the figures are, who lose their lives in the U.S., to gun-related issues. The United Kingdom, Europe, has nothing of the sort. Surely that evidence is staring you in the face.
Right. Well, there are two different types of issues here. One is normal murder and homicide, and then there are these mass public shootings. In terms of murder and normal violent crime, we're actually low in terms of violent crime compared to the UK and compared to Europe. We're high in terms of murders, but that overwhelmingly has to do with drug gangs. Over half the murders in the United States take place in 2% of the counties. And if you ever see a murder map of those 2% of the counties, it's basically about 8 to 10 blocks, literally, in each of those counties, which account for murders.
How would you respond to that, Richard Wolff, that this is, whilst the figures are big, under closer scrutiny, they tell a different story, as John suggests?
Well, John is conveniently ignoring that actually most gun deaths come from suicide and domestic violence. So if you just focus on gang crime, he can skew the statistics any way he wants. I actually think it's awful. It's a tragedy every single day that so many Americans die needlessly from all forms of gun deaths. Now, John may take the position that, you know, guns stop certain types of gun deaths, but actually, in aggregate, as a percentage and as a total number, this is a daily, bloody tragedy for this country. And America is exceptional in many ways, but it shouldn't be exceptional in this way.
And John, just a final point, sir. Sorry to talk across you, John. I'm just aware we're on the clock. Just explain, if you would, for our listeners, in a sentence, why it is right, proper and sensible for the average American to want to carry a gun?
Well, police are important, but police understand themselves that they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's been committed. And the question, what's the safest course of action for people to take? And what you find is that those states that have had the biggest increases in concealed handgun permits have seen the biggest drops in violent crime rates.
John R. Lott, Jr., thank you, sir, for your points on that. I'd like to get your views, too, of course, 0345-6060973. You heard two very distinct sides of the gun-carrying argument. This is a country that we should look to as a big influence. Our older brother, the leaders of the free world, the land of the free, the place where you can be what you want to be, as the lyric goes. This is a place that we should think of as more civilised than anywhere else pretty much on the globe. In the wake of the attacks in that church and the murders yesterday and previous ones, Las Vegas, of course, being the obvious of late, and there are many more. How does that argument sit with you? You heard our last contributor there, John Lott Jr., telling us that, in fact, carrying guns saves lives. It's the sensible thing to do. 0345 6060 973.